I work at the United Community Center as a pre-college advisor. The center provides programs to Latinos and residents on the south side of Milwaukee. In 2007, I started working with Ana that was brought to me by her mother, or more like dragged by the ear, as she would say. She was at the beginning of a rebellious stage in her life. She was being bullied in school and saw abuse in the home. She lived in a neighborhood where gangs and drugs, prostitution were prevalent. I began to mentor her on a regular basis and signed her up to numerous programs. As time went on, she began to grow and mature. She is now happier, more outgoing, and enjoying life. Through the Life Changers program, she accepted Jesus Christ into her heart, and it was at that point that I really saw her life being rebuilt from the bottom up. She later joined Crossroads here at Oak Creek Assembly of God and met some amazing people. She is now getting married this fall. My name is Raymond, and God is rebuilding this city.
Good God, He calls us to do hard things, and the only way you'll ever fail is if you give up. I want to say that one more time. We serve a good God who calls us to do hard things, and the only way we fail is if we give up. We've been studying the book of Nehemiah, and in case you've missed it, let me bring you up to speed. Nehemiah was a Jew serving as the cupbearer to King Artaxerxes in Persia. Basically, he would taste the wine before it went to the king, just in case anyone was trying to kill the king. One day, Nehemiah heard from his brothers that the walls of Jerusalem, his homeland, were broken down and the gates had been burned with fire, and he was totally devastated. His heart was broken, and he thought, someone has to do something about this, and that may as well be me. You know, before we go much further, it's probably helpful to talk about what causes walls to break down. How does the wall around a marriage, how does a wall around a family, a wall around a church, a wall around a school or a city or a nation, how do these walls fall apart? Proverbs 24:30 says, I walked by the field of a lazy person, the vineyard of one with no common sense. I saw that it was overgrown with nettles, it was covered with weeds, and its walls were broken down. Then as I looked around and thought about it, I learned this lesson. A little extra sleep, a little more slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, then poverty will pounce on you like a bandit, scarcity will attack you like an armed robber. So how do walls fall apart? They happen by neglect, apathy, indifference. You know, everything in life moves from order to chaos. Everything over time, it breaks down. Our bodies break down. The average adult loses 50 to 70 billion cells a day. No wonder some of you are taking a nap. Relationships break down. Families break down, churches break down, schools break down, cities rot at the core, nations break down unless we choose to rebuild. And so Nehemiah, he gets a vision to rebuild the walls of his city. And so he prayed to God for his favor. He asked the king for permission, and against all odds, the king says, yes, you can go to Jerusalem, rebuild, and I will fund the project. And so God turns a bartender into a builder. And if God can do that, God can use you. Nehemiah, he traveled some 1,000 miles to Jerusalem. He surveyed the damage. He assembled the troops. And after 140 years of hopelessness, Nehemiah begins to bring hope. He said to the people, we can rebuild the walls. And sure enough, they started and the work is going great. But the problem is this. Whenever you move forward for God, the opposition will always show up. And sure enough, the people of Jerusalem, they have opponents. Sanballat and Tobiah and others who were political opponents and said, we do not want these walls going up, and we've got to keep the Jews weak and dependent upon us. Honestly, they were trying to guard their own power and financial interests. And so the bottom line is this: whenever you move forward for God, your enemy wants to stop you. And so Nehemiah chapter 4 is where we'll begin. And I want to look at, how do we defeat opposition? How do we defeat discouragement in our lives? Because whenever you move forward for God, there's a very real spiritual enemy trying to stop you. In fact, the Bible says our enemy's mission is to steal and kill and destroy everything that is so dear to the heart of God. 1 Peter 5:8 says that our enemy roars around like a lion looking for whom he can devour. Whenever you move forward for God, your spiritual enemy will oppose you. And when you look at the story of Nehemiah, it'd be so easy to think, well, it should have been smooth sailing. Because Nehemiah, he had already given so much up to follow the call of God. He left his comfortable job in the court. He sacrificed. He traveled 1,000 miles. Surely at this point, God would remove the obstacles and opposition, but you couldn't be more wrong. So here's the key thought I want you to take away today. We don't face opposition because we are doing something wrong. We face opposition when we're doing something right. I want to say that again. We don't face opposition doing something wrong. We face it when we're doing something right. Many of you might say, you know what, that's a relief. I must be doing a lot of things right because I'm facing a lot of opposition. The truth is, if we're not doing anything significant, why should our spiritual enemy even pay attention to us? It's when we're doing something significant that our enemy opposes us. I'll give you an example. Oak Creek right now is growing quite a bit. And so I really felt God put on my heart, we need to start reaching out to some of the communities being built just within a mile or two of the church. And so we began to rally people together. We would go there and pray just as the dirt was being moved before a single building went up. We're going to pray. We're going to ask God to do a revival right here in our backyard. Finally, the construction on this project finished. And so it's now time. We got to go from prayer to action. And so we assembled welcome baskets for all the new residents. And our mission was, we weren't going to do any hard sell. We weren't going to offer prayer or, hey, do you know where you'd go if you died tonight? Just simply, hey, we're so glad you're here in the neighborhood. Please enjoy these treats. Some people hugged us. Some people cried. They were so taken aback and happy. Some people asked for prayer. We prayed for multiple people on the spot. And some people got very angry. One guy got so physically intimidating that I called out to the other group. I'm like, hey, I think we better leave and go now. So the next morning I get to church, I check my voicemail. Sure enough, the property manager has left me a message. Give her a call. And so I call and she says, you know what, I've gotten several complaints about you guys last night. And I said, well, could you please tell me how many people complained? And she said, well, at least one. I said, I'll respect your wishes. Now, something interesting that happened that night, I heard a domestic dispute in that building that was so loud, so angry, so dark. I had never heard a fight like that before in my life. And so I asked her, you know, I know someone complained about us dropping off cookies. Did anyone mention the major dispute taking place in the building last night? She said, no. No, no one mentioned that. And so I just let that hang out there for a moment and then said goodbye. I know for a fact we did not face opposition on that because we were doing something wrong. We were doing something right. And through the story of Nehemiah, I want to show you some ways that our spiritual enemy will try to discourage you, try to oppose you. And hopefully you will be inspired in spite of your discouragement today. And the first thing you know is this: the enemy will often try to discourage you from the outside. Your spiritual enemy will use outside forces to discourage you and get you to quit. And we see this so clearly in Nehemiah chapter 4. Nehemiah, he is building up the wall, and the enemy showed up to discourage God's people. And here's what the Bible says. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and greatly incensed. So what did he do as a result? He ridiculed the Jews. He made fun of them. Verse 2, and in the presence of his associates and the army of Samaria, he said, "What are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble burned as they are?" And so Nehemiah and the Jews, they are being ridiculed. "You can't do that. This is a stupid project." And in verse 3, a guy named Tobiah, he chimes in. Here's what he says. I love this. Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, "What are they building? Even a fox climbing up on it would break down their wall of stones." So here's how I picture these two guys. If you don't know who that is, you can go ahead and ask your neighbor. Or maybe better, we could say Dumb and Dumber. Or maybe this is like Debbie Downer and Buzzkill Bobby, right? These people just show up. And so the idea is Jerusalem becoming a walled city once again. This sent chills through the neighboring governors. They knew Israel's history as well as their own, and if Israel got back on its feet economically and militarily, it meant they would lose control of the region. And Sanballat, the governor of Samaria, he had the most to lose. And the fact that the Jews were rebuilding the city without his permission, it was infuriating. And so he was losing control. And Sanballat, he's thorough in his criticism. He criticized the character of the builders. He questioned their ability. He challenged their commitment to finish what they started. And his criticism had a specific purpose in mind. He wanted the workers to be discouraged and to quit. And so there's opposition from the outside. And I want to show you two ways the enemy will use opposition from the outside to oppose you. The first one is this: you will often face obstacles. You'll take two steps forward, and then it seems like it's three steps back. It could be that God has spoken to you, and you've decided, hey, we're going to get out of debt. And so you have that budget meeting with your family, and we're going to start packing lunches. And then all of a sudden, you need new tires this week, $800. Two steps forward, three steps back. You may say, you know what? I'm going to finally lead my family spiritually. And so you sit down and say, hey, we're just going to pray at the end of each day. We're going to do a devotion together. We're going to get involved on Wednesday nights. And then your teenager says, you know, I'm not even sure if I believe in God. Two steps forward, three steps back. Maybe you've been praying, hey, God, grow my area of ministry. We've got these great plans, and then a key volunteer quits. Two steps forward, three steps back. When you are doing something for God, expect obstacles, because our enemy doesn't oppose you when you're doing something wrong. He opposes you when you're doing something right. It would have been so easy for Nehemiah to have said, well, God must not be in this. I am convinced so many God-given dreams, they die at the very first obstacle. Some of you, it's been two steps forward, three steps back. Don't let an obstacle discourage you from doing what you know God has called you to do. The second way we face opposition from the outside is with criticism. The way that Sanballat and Tobiah, they come at the Jews, who do you think you are? You are feeble. You'll never get anything done. If a fox walked across your wall, it would topple. He was criticized, and you will be criticized as well. You get so excited about doing something on the behalf of God. Some of you sense, hey, God might be calling me to be a foster parent. And so you're excited and you're taking classes. And then you tell your mother-in-law. And she says, well, good luck with that. You can't even take care of the kids you have. Or maybe you're leaving a higher paying job to go to a lower paying job, but you sense this is a greater ministry opportunity for you. And all your friends say, that makes no sense. No one does that. Or maybe you are fired up. You're going back to your campus this fall. And man, I'm really going to let people know that I'm a follower of Christ and I'm going to host a Bible study. And your friends eventually are saying, would you please just give that up? Here's what you need to understand. If you're going to do something significant for God, if you want to rebuild, criticism is a part of the job. If you're going to do anything for God, you will be criticized. And Nehemiah was criticized. So how did Nehemiah respond to this? The very first thing he does is he takes it to God, and he does it immediately. Verse 4 says, hear us, our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders. Now, when I read that prayer, this thought comes to mind. Doesn't seem like Nehemiah handles criticism too well, right? Like, if he took a spiritual gifts test, I'm not sure mercy would have been real high up on the test. Like, this is a strong prayer. This is an angry prayer. Now, some will read this and say, well, Nehemiah, he's actually defending God, so it's okay. Sanballat, he was actually taking his shots at God, and so Nehemiah is strong. He's defending God, standing up for God. I think Nehemiah is ticked. I think he's angry. I think he's saying, Sanballat, out of my face. And so he's upset and he's angry. He prays angry, but don't miss the bigger point. Immediately after the criticism, he immediately prays. And I just want you to read this and hear how abrupt the transition is. Verse 3. Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, what are they building? Even a fox climbing up on it would break down their wall of stones. Verse 4, hear us, O God, for we are despised. Prayer was his very first response to his critics. He didn't get all passive-aggressive on Facebook. It wasn't to tweet. Nehemiah, he doesn't take any time to cool down. He immediately passes along everything he's thinking and feeling to God. He takes it to the only one that can actually do something about it. And that's why this prayer sounds so hostile. He just unloads on God. And then the second thing he does is he goes back to work. Verse 6 says, so we rebuilt the wall till all of it reached half its height, for the people worked with all their heart. Here's a common mistake we make when people criticize us. We allow people who criticize us to become the focus of our attention. The natural response to criticism is we want to defend ourselves, but this can be a waste of time and energy. Answering questions for people who aren't all that interested in getting the answers. Anytime people criticize you, you take it to God immediately and you go back to work. You know, criticism, it strikes an emotional chord in us. And that emotion, it has to go somewhere. If we shoot our criticism back at our critics, then we're playing their game. You know, if we bottle it up on the inside, maybe that leads to depression or ulcers. Or another option is you just wait to emotionally vomit when your spouse gets home from work or some random stranger. But the only healthy, the only profitable thing to do is just to pour out your heart to God. He knows what's in your heart. He can handle a little venting. Matter of fact, I think he's honored when we take our deepest frustrations, our deepest hurts, because that shows that we trust him and it builds intimacy with him. And so you want to rebuild? You take the criticism to God and you go back to work. Because ultimately, you do not answer to your critics. You answer to God. You see, when you're doing something right, your enemy will oppose you from the outside with obstacles and with criticism. But your enemy doesn't stop there. Your enemy will also try to discourage you from within. The enemy will try to discourage you from the inside. And you can see this in verse 10. Let the insecurities of the Jewish people, they're starting to kind of come to the surface. It says, meanwhile, the people in Judah said, and these are Nehemiah's people, the strength of our laborers is giving out, and there is so much rubble that we cannot rebuild the wall. What is this? This is discouragement from the inside. When you are doing something significant, your spiritual enemy will try to discourage you from the inside and outside. So you know what? I don't think we have what it takes. I mean, the walls have been down for 140 years. Who are we to even think that we could rebuild? Whenever you try to do something for God, the enemy will oppose you from outside and maybe more consequently from inside, from your heart, from your mind. If you've ever felt discouraged doing the work of God, I have good news for you. You are in very good company. Because the greatest heroes of our faith, they all had moments of discouragement and even wanting to die. I think Moses is a great example. He was so fed up of the people asking for meat. Here was his prayer, Numbers 11:13. Where am I supposed to get meat for all these people? They keep whining to me, saying, give us meat to eat. I can't carry all these people by myself. The load is far too heavy. If this is how you intend to treat me, just go ahead and kill me. Do me a favor and spare me this misery. I hope that's not how your morning devotions started off. King David. He's a man after God's own heart. We'd all love to be David. He was athletic. He was musical. And yet you read through the Psalms, and he dealt with discouragement so often. Elijah, he calls down fire from heaven, but then finds out Jezebel's trying to kill him. And he says, God, just take my life. The Apostle Paul at the Church of Corinth, he says, we were burdened beyond measure, above strength, so that we despaired even of life. When you rebuild, when you're working from the Lord, you can expect discouragement from the inside. Early on as a pastor, my main responsibility, Wednesday nights. And so I noticed a pattern. Every Thursday morning, I felt like I wanted to quit. Man, things just didn't go as well as I would have hoped. Doesn't seem like God is working fast enough. And so I called a friend, said, you know what, I feel like quitting every Thursday morning. And he said, isn't that interesting? It's right after what is your biggest move for God, just like clockwork, you feel like quitting. And so I got wise to that. Now we don't talk about quitting on Thursday morning. We talk about the wins in our leadership group. I can tell you there's a pattern to the discouragement in your life. And you will face opposition when you step out to rebuild for God, not because you're doing something wrong, because you're doing something right. And you'll be criticized and you'll be misunderstood. And from the inside, you'll start to doubt yourself because the spiritual enemy wants to stop the work of God in you and through you. And so be encouraged. Be encouraged today. Those feelings come because you're doing something on behalf of God. I don't know about you, where you're at this morning. There's times when I get discouraged. I feel overwhelmed. You know, the labor is giving out. We can't rebuild the wall. And look what happens in verse 14. How do you defeat those moments of discouragement? Here's what Scripture says. Nehemiah said, "After I looked things over, I stood up and I said to the nobles, the officials, and the rest of the people, 'Don't be afraid of them.'" Speaking of the opponents, he says, don't be afraid. If we were living in New Testament times, he'd say, don't be afraid of them, because greater is he living within us than he who is within the world. Don't be afraid of them, because if God is for us, who can be against us? Don't be afraid of them. That's even a bigger smattering of applause than first service. Wow, just a smattering. What can separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus? Can trouble, can persecution, hardships, nakedness, famine, can sword? No, in all of these things, we are more than conquerors through Christ. And so I hope you're feeling this. You do not need to be afraid of your spiritual enemy. He goes on to say, verse 14, remember the Lord. Remember is a call to battle. Remember the Alamo. Remember Pearl Harbor. Remember 9/11. If you're in Israel and you're in the army, remember Masada. He says, remember the Lord, who is great and awesome, and fight for your families, for your sons and for your daughters, your wives and your homes. He says, if you're feeling discouraged, you need to do these two things. If you're feeling incapable or unworthy, the first thing, remember the Lord your God. Remember how awesome he is. And then this is what Nehemiah says, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome. And this would have been loaded for his audience, because they would have immediately thought back, remember when you were slaves in Egypt. Remember the time when God raised up someone from our own ranks, Moses, who said, you know what, I can't handle this job. I can't even publicly speak. And God raised him up and set a nation free. Whenever I'm discouraged, I remember the power, I remember the presence of God in my life. And no doubt you have many stories of this. Whenever I remember that community and knocking on doors, it's so sweet now every time someone starts attending the church from that complex. Say, God, you are faithful. It took 2 years, but I have patience. God, you are faithful. Your presence is working in my life. And some of you, it's time that you need to remember what God has done. Think back to when God provided, when he protected, when he healed, when God showed you favor. You got the job. He protected your heart. And the second thing Nehemiah says is this, you got to fight for a cause. He says, don't fight for yourself. It's not about you. He says, fight for your wives, fight for your kids, fight for your family, fight for something bigger and grander than yourself. Fight for someone who needs you to stand up for them. Because if you fight for someone else, God will give you a supernatural strength that you could never have on your own. Nehemiah says, fight for your sons and for your daughters and for your wives and for your homes. We were made to fight. To fight the battles that are worth fighting. It's my job in our house to lock all the doors each night before we go to bed. And so this summer we went away for a week, and when we got back to our house, noticed that the doors had been unlocked the whole time we were gone. But it's okay, I came back with this. I said, it's okay, because all my greatest treasures were not in the house this last week. It's So a few nights ago, Joni again, she says, I think I hear people moving downstairs. You better go down there and check that out. So I check out the situation. We're in the clear. At other times, she's thought she's heard machine guns in the neighborhood. Thankfully, that was also not true. But I want to ask you this question. Think of your family right now. What are you more likely to face? Someone breaking into your home? Are you more likely to face a physical attack? Or are you more likely to face a spiritual attack? What's more likely to come against your home? And are you prepared? Are you willing to do something about it? Are you willing to fight? We are called to fight the good fight. Our faith is not a playground. It is often a battlefield, and we don't fight against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers in this dark world. We have a spiritual enemy who opposes you, not because you're doing something wrong, but because you're doing something right. And it's time to fight. Fight like a woman of God. Fight like a man of God and get on your knees. And here's what Nehemiah and his people did. This is how the story wraps up for today, verse 15. It says, when our enemies heard that we were aware of their plot and that God had frustrated it, we all returned to the wall, each to our own work. From that day on, half of my men did the work while the other half were equipping with spears, shields, bows, and armor. The officers posted themselves behind all the people of Judah who were building the wall. Those who carried materials did their work with one hand and held a weapon in the other. And I love this image. Hey, we're going to work with one hand and we've got our weapon in the other hand. And no matter how long we have to do this, we're going to do it because it's that important that the wall gets built, that we fight the fights worth fighting. And so I want you to think this morning, what is the fight that God has called you to? Maybe you're to fight, to stand up for someone again being mistreated or abused. Maybe you're going to fight for single parents. Maybe you're going to fight for your marriage because it's coming under an intense attack and it's time to fight. Maybe you're going to fight for the unborn because their only voice is your voice. Maybe you're going to fight for your kids. And you're going to say, you know what, I know there's a struggle in their faith, but I'm not going to let the enemy walk in the front door unlocked and not challenge them and do something about it. Maybe you're going to fight for people who don't know Christ. I would challenge you with this. You and I, as followers of Christ, we need to strive to have one great rejection every single day. I don't like rejection. I don't like doors closed on me. But the fact of the matter is, if we're advancing the kingdom, if we're building walls, Jesus knew rejection better than anyone. Will you stand up and will you fight? Don't ever give up. If you're discouraged this morning, I want to say, God is still going to use you. Realize that there is a spiritual enemy behind the discouragement in your life. It's not because you're doing something wrong. It's because you're doing something right. I believe there are people here this morning, you have given up on the vision that God has called you to, because things have been harder than expected. Others haven't understood. Others maybe have criticized, and maybe there's been a sense of discouragement in your soul. You've taken all of those things, you've threaded them together and said, obviously God has had a change of plans. Obviously, I'm part of the problem, and I need to step away, step aside. And I'm telling you that you've misheard. You've misconstrued the signs. You've gotten your wires crossed. The opposition is not a sign that you're doing something wrong. It's that God is using you. You press on. We serve a good God, and he calls us to do hard things, and the only way you will ever fail is if you quit. I want you to stand with me as we close in worship and prayer this morning.